What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Stretch 4 podcast. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line, I got my pick and pop playoff partner, Josh Cohen. How you doing?
Only for one more night, and then we move on to off-season pick and pop partner.
That's so sad, man. I hope there's a version 2 of The Last Dance that comes out or something, you know?
Yeah, LeBron's going to send that out soon. Don't worry.
Made by the Uninterrupted. The banger in the paint with healthy shoulders and all. Rajan Walia, how you feeling?
You know what? My shoulders are actually hurting from a long day at work, but this offseason is going to be pretty much watching Space Jam 2 reruns. Unfortunately, I don't know what's more torturous, watching that or watching the Lakers lift another trophy.
Man, for those who can't see, I am shaking my head so hard. There is no way in hell I'm going to watch Space Jam 2.
Yeah, me neither. Like, that's ridiculous.
I don't think I can do it. You're telling me I got to listen to Anthony Davis in a movie? Did you ever listen to that All the Smoke podcast with Jamie Foxx on it?
Yep.
Anthony Davis sounds like Jamie Foxx doing the Jay-Z impersonation.
Okay. That's actually pretty accurate.
Right? If you can picture that in your mind, yo, that day after he hit the game winner against Denver, that is all I could think of when Malika Andrews or Rachel Nichols, whoever was interviewing him. I was like, yo, man, Jamie Foxx just got, like, landed in the bubble? What the hell is this? Come on, man. I'm not listening to Anthony Davis for a whole 2 hours or an hour and a half. Unbelievable.
His voice is still nowhere near as annoying as Richard Jefferson's, though.
Yeah, but RJ is funny, at least. You know.
True. The first time I heard RJ's voice, though, is when the Nets beat the Raptors in, I think, the first playoff series that they played in, right? And he got an interview after the game. And they were talking about how the Raptors fans were wearing red shirts, and the Nets were wearing the red jerseys that night. He was making fun of all the Raptors fans for coming to cheer for the Nets. The combination of his voice and what happened, like the storyline behind that, and him pointing that out was too much for me. I hated him so much after that post-game interview.
I think you're just salty because the Raptors lost to the Nets. That has nothing to do with the man's voice. He sounds like a normal guy.
It was just like, yeah, it was salt in the wound having to listen to that nasally-ass voice after they beat us, and then him making fun of us on top of it. Like, come on, man. Too much.
Oh, man.
But honestly, sorry. Like, I watched Kevin Durant's movie, so I'm probably going to watch this one, too. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, there's almost no way that you guys, and myself included, are not going to watch this movie. Like, we're going to watch it.
Raj, did you watch Thunderstruck? Because I did not.
No, I didn't, but I probably have watched... I've watched Kyrie's movie.
I did not watch that one.
Uncle Drew?
Wow, you guys are so with the times, man. I didn't watch either of them. I'm pretty confident in myself in not watching Space Jam 2 now. Hell no, man. But let's get back on track, guys. Unfortunately, you guys have both talked about it. We're probably nearing the end of the season because... the Lakers on Tuesday night won 102-96, up 3-1. Bam came back. I'd say Bam was probably around like 75-80%. I don't know, man. I never know how to really take a guess or like create numbers based on people's health, but you know, it is what it is. And you know, the biggest thing that the Lakers did that we saw was putting Anthony Davis on Jimmy Butler from the very get-go. You saw the very first possession he was on him. Jimmy couldn't do a thing. Second possession, they got the switch out. Dwight goes on Jimmy Butler, and then Bam. Like, typically the play is to get, you know, Bam the ball whenever there's a switch, and then Bam goes up against Anthony Davis. Bad idea. Third play, Jimmy Butler drives on Dwight Howard after the switch again. Layup right over him. Never see Dwight Howard again. He's pretty much done for the day. And that's when we proceed to just see Anthony Davis locking down Jimmy Butler. And thus, you know, sort of locking down the Heat's offense because they could not buy a thing in this game and make it easy. Like, Anthony Davis made them work for it the whole way through, had 4 blocks. What else did he have? I think he had like 22 points, 9 rebounds. This guy was an animal. Combine that with LeBron James just chilling in the first half and then really turning it on in the second half, right? Like, third quarter comes around and you can see the guy finally wake up. And the Lakers just, you know, they just never took their foot off the pedal. They never slowed down. Every time you thought the Heat could make a little bit of a run, you know, like, I think they got the lead at one point, but it didn't last very long. I mean, that was it. there was no way that the Heat had any chance in this game. Not when LeBron and AD were actually showing up to the game without getting any fouls. So, I mean, Raj, like you already said it. It looks like we're coming up to an end on Friday. Do you see any way that Miami can extend this? I mean, do you just hope that one of their shooters gets really hot?
Can they? Yeah, absolutely. Like, they were a lot more competitive in the last two games. Obviously, one of the games they won. And they did a pretty good job in game four. But again, it's an uphill battle for the Heat, especially when they're playing like Kendrick Nunn and relying on consistent scoring from their bench players. Compare that with almost a guaranteed 25 points from both Anthony Davis and LeBron James. It makes it difficult, but you know what? Friday, I think the Heat could win, but I don't see it happening, especially with the Lakers bringing out their Mamba jerseys. So,
yeah, I predict that the Lakers are going to win by either 8 or 24 points or some multiplication of the two. So I think that the series is definitely over. Miami had their chances in that game, but honestly, they couldn't score when it mattered because, as you say, Anthony Davis is just unreal. He's a human, you know, Venus flytrap, essentially. Their strategy of, you know, putting him on Butler and just going way under every screen, treating him like, you know, old Rajon Rondo was an interesting look. And it obviously worked because Butler couldn't get to the rim. And when he did, he would pass the ball out because he's being afraid of, you know, Anthony Davis coming from behind and blocking him, which happened a few times regardless. So they have to find a way to get AD in foul trouble like they did in the game that they won, or find a way to maybe like do a couple pick and rolls at the free throw line for Butler. Have it like a lower down type of pick and roll option instead of like at the 3-point line where Davis can just play the free throw line essentially. So they have to find different ways to schematically get Butler going to the rim because they don't have much else in terms of offense.
That's not a bad idea actually. So if you ran a pick and roll from, let's say like from a wing around 18 feet out, and you were, let's use Robinson because they tend to do that a lot, right? You use Robinson as the screen man, and who's covering him? Danny Green or KCP most of these games? And then you end up having either one of those guys on Butler or Anthony Davis is just going to fight through. But I don't know, from that distance, like he sort of has to fight through, wouldn't he?
Yeah, it would just create more space if they did it at the free throw line. Because once Robinson, you know, pops out for three, you either have to have KCP run at him, or if Davis is behind the play, Davis is going to have a few feet to actually catch up to him, to where he's going to have to make a decision whether to jump or not. And then Miami should have an advantage. So I think that's one adjustment you'll probably see is that they'll do the pick and roll lower. Sort of like what teams did when Andre Miller, you know, ran pick and roll. He would like post the guy up until the point where he got him to like the 17-foot mark, and then run the pick and roll. And that way, like once you go across the screen, you're basically in the paint at that point. So that they have to find ways to get Butler to the free throw line and try to put Davis in positions to at least try to get him in foul trouble.
I'm trying to figure out ways to remove Anthony Davis from the whole situation, right? So what if you just put Butler in a corner? And then had, you know, a Hero Bam pick and like screen situation on the other side.
Nah, that gives him free reign to do what he did a lot of the game, where he was just like sitting in the paint because he had no fear that Butler was going to shoot the 3-pointer. And the first time that Butler took a three, Davis barely just got a hand up. And Butler took like the most relaxed 3-point shot that I think I've seen in the finals. Didn't jump at all. It was just like all arms. Because he had to take it because Davis was like 15 feet off him. He's like, all right, I'm finally going to do this. I think it was in the fourth quarter too. You know, Butler avoided taking threes up until that point. But at that point, like it's their only offense, right? The rest of their offense is totally stymied because they didn't have to help anymore off of Butler.
The one from the wing, right? The right wing?
Yeah. Yeah, he caught the ball. He was like waiting for Davis to get up on him. And then he's like, all right, I guess I got to do this.
Yeah. That looked hella awkward. It was even more awkward because the broadcast had it on the rail cam. So it was like you're just sitting there and this guy's just like chucking it up all wrist. And was like, what the hell is this? You're not Jason Kidd. You're not Rajon Rondo. You can't shoot like this, man.
Honestly, he looked like Andre Miller taking a three.
That's pretty good. I like that. Oh, man. Raj, tell me, do we expect Danny Green to do anything? Your favorite player in the league?
No. I think the thing with the Lakers is they really need two out of their four other players to have like okay games. And by okay, I mean like get into double digit scoring. And last game, it was KCP that stepped up big, and I think he got over 15 points for them, and he was the leading scorer at half. It's either KCP, Danny Green, Rajon Rondo, or Alex Caruso. One of those, or two of those four players, have to just put up 10 points and help with the Lakers' secondary scoring, or Markieff Morris if you really want to throw him in there as well. But just going back to what you were saying about Butler against Anthony Davis, and I know that Anthony Davis, when Butler did go to the rim, really contested his shots, got some blocks. But I think that if Butler isn't aggressive and doesn't put pressure on Anthony Davis, it doesn't create any other opportunities for Duncan Robinson, for Tyler Hero, for Bam. And the offense seems like they're just probing until it's like 7-8 seconds left in the shot clock, and then they have to run a rushed play, which is never really going to be a good shot, a high percentage shot. So I think Miami still has to be aggressive, even if Davis is on Butler. Like, it doesn't mean that he has to try to finish over him, but he has to get penetration, make Anthony Davis move, and then, hey, Bam is going to be on a smaller player. Let's be real. Dwight Howard or JaVale McGee aren't playing more than 15 minutes a game. So he's going to be on a player like Danny Green or Kyle Kuzma, and you have to take advantage of that matchup then.
Yeah, I like that idea. I mean, that's sort of what I was alluding to with the having Butler hang on one side and just run Hero and Bam pick and roll or whatever, right? It's just the idea of getting of feeding that mismatch for Bam, because you're right. If Anthony Davis is going to play the five and he's covering Butler, then you're going to have a mismatch. And most of the time last game, it was actually Markieff Morris or surprisingly LeBron covering Bam. I mean, if you really think about it, how tall is Bam? Like 6'10"? He's not like
6'9".
So he's basically LeBron's height, right? Very similar build. So it kind of makes sense that LeBron can like stay with him inside.
Yeah, but I still think it's all about like the reason why the Miami Heat were able to control game three was because they were able to put the Lakers in positions where their rotations weren't ideal because LeBron had to take rest and Anthony Davis got into foul trouble. And it's very easy for me to say it's to get someone in foul trouble, but I think the idea of attacking the rim and making defenders have to contest shots that are in the paint that can be interpreted as fouls puts pressure on the referees, puts pressure on the defenders. It makes the defenders have to make decisions and it probably tires them out so they're not as effective offensively. The way that Jimmy Butler was playing, especially in the first half, against the Lakers, like he was afraid to shoot and he was kind of standing back because obviously Davis was playing off of him, and it really allowed Davis to help on a lot of other plays. It basically stalled the Heat offense, and I think Butler has to be a bit more aggressive in his mindset of getting to the rim or taking that shot.
I believe that Miami scored 22 points in the 7 minutes that Anthony Davis was off the court. So, again, they just have to find a way to get him off the court. Otherwise, they have no chance. It's sort of like the Embiid situation against Toronto last year, where I think they were like minus 1,000 with Embiid off the court in that series. And that's why they ended up getting Horford. They spent that much money because they were so worried about the minutes that Embiid wasn't playing. And they totally messed up their entire scheme and team by doing that. So, I don't know what Miami's going to do. I mean, Spoelstra's obviously a wizard. He's probably second best coach, if not the best coach in the league, especially when it comes to adjustments with Nick Nurse. So I expect him to come up with something entirely different that is going to stymie the Lakers for at least a quarter. But ultimately, it's going to come down to, you know, star power and, you know, Miami's ability to get Anthony Davis off the court and hope that Bam has, you know, he had a good game, obviously, but to be even more impactful, especially in the second half of the game.
What if Miami ran Bam and Olynyk out there at the same time? I mean, the starting lineup for most of the year until like the trade deadline was, you know, a front court of Bam and Kelly Olynyk. You know, they're both big guys. Olynyk can actually spread the floor, something that, you know, Butler obviously doesn't do. I'm not saying to take Butler out. That's just absurd. But maybe put Olynyk in there more, a little bit more than Crowder, or like even at their minutes. Because Kelly Olynyk had, for those, what was it, three games that or two games that Bam was out, he was incredible. He had awesome games. And then last game, for game four, he had 12 minutes. Never got into a flow of things, got into foul trouble. And, you know, with an offensive player like that, like, why wouldn't you just shove him in there? Let the guy gun. I don't see why they wouldn't just show, like, shove him out there.
It's because of the positional disadvantage that you create for yourself, right? Like, he was playing center in those games where he can create an advantage for his team because they had four out with Jimmy Butler. And then if you have – I think that's an issue that Miami's going to run into unless Bam, you know, is able to develop a three-point shot, is that this might end up being their ceiling because you can't have two non-shooters on the court at the same time in today's NBA unless you have the two best non-shooters, I guess you could say, in the NBA. Like, if you had, like, Jimmy Butler and Giannis at the court at the same time, then it might work if you have, you know, the shooters that the Heat have around them. But – Bam has to reach another level in his game, I think, in order for them to really make that work and become a real title contender, I think. Because, you know, when Olynyk is out there instead of Bam, they're actually more unguardable in this series than the opposite, just because of how the Lakers scheme. And if they want to play Dwight Howard, for example. And, you know, if they have Anthony Davis out there and Jimmy Butler, and then you have Kelly Olynyk as your center with, you know, three other shooters around Butler, it makes them much more difficult to guard than having Bam in there where you can switch a lot of screen roles and not have to worry as much about Bam trying to take advantage of LeBron, right? So having both of them out there just creates another target for LeBron on defense too, right? LeBron's just going to target Kelly Olynyk out there and obviously the two guards, Nunn and Tyler Hero and Kendrick Nunn. Let's talk about him for a sec. He was so bad in that game. He's 2-for-11. And defensively, he's getting picked apart. Like, Tyler Hero got destroyed in the first quarter, but after that, like, Kendrick Nunn was just as bad as he was.
Raj, is Kendrick Nunn just a worse hero of, or a worse version of Tyler Hero at this point?
At this point, yeah, I would say so. I think that Kendrick Nunn is a poor man's Goran Dragic. And again, no knock on Kendrick Nunn. Like, he's had an incredible season. It's just the matchup doesn't work so well here. And I think the problem I had with Kendrick Nunn is he was getting the ball with like less than 4 or 5 seconds left, and he was taking some shots that, again, they weren't great looks. And that's not the player that I want to be shooting with 5 seconds left in the shot clock on several possessions in a row. And again, the Miami Heat have to get into their offense a bit faster, and they need to be able to have Butler, have Bam, have Jay Crowder, even Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson take a lot more shots than Kendrick Nunn. In the game, he was 2-for-11, and I personally think out of those 11 shots he took, maybe 6 or 7 of them were not good looks at the basket for him.
So I have an important question. What's the equivalent to what Mark Jackson said with relation to Kendrick Nunn? So he said that a hero is more than a sandwich, right? Is that what he said? So is a Nunn... Is a Nunn more than a worker of God? What would you compare that to?
I don't know, man. I'm not going to religious talks here. Josh, this is a very slippery slope that you're trying to test, my friend.
Yeah, I guess I'll stop while I'm one way behind. God, that line was stupid, though. I didn't even know what the hell he was talking about before he explained it to me.
You know what's funny? I was listening to one of the Athletics NBA podcasts, Point of Contention. So basically they have one guy as a host and then two guys going back and forth with like different perspectives. Obviously they want to like create an arguing standpoint, but in a joking fashion, not like First Take or Undisputed where they're actually serious about their shit. And so one of the guys, Marcus Thompson, is like one of the OG reporters for the Golden State Warriors. So he was there during like the We Believe era and that kind of stuff. And he was saying that that reference that Mark Jackson made was actually to a book from the 70s from a black writer called A Hero is Nothing But a Sandwich. What a long way to get around to that reference, eh?
Oh, God. That just makes it even worse.
Yeah. So it was like supposed to be an homage to it, except no one understood. I don't even know if this... I don't know if it was on purpose. Obviously, none of us know that kind of thing, but yeah, just a little nice tidbit to know. Raj,
it's really not. It's really not.
That's okay. Sorry. I'm sorry for wasting a minute and a half of your time, Josh.
Oh, God.
Please forgive me.
You're killing us, Peter.
It's bad enough Mark Jackson said it, you know?
Hero's not a sandwich, man.
Like, he obviously planned that, too. Like, he probably went back in time. He's like, What can I use today as one of my lines needing a commercial? That? What? Come yeah. on, man.
He's probably
man
saw that
down,
snarl.
Man down.
Yeah, hey, relax. Stop talking shit about the man, all right? Let him do his job, Josh.
He's awful. Jesus. Who's worse, Josh. Mark Jackson or Chris Webber or yeah. Reggie Miller?
Oof.
Tough choice.
Oof. Oof. I don't even know. I mean,
I think Reggie's definitely the worst.
Reggie is the worst because of his voice.
Yeah.
Webber is just Webber's a clown, right, Raj? Webber's just a hype man.
Webber used to be good, but I think he's like losing his marbles more and more as he continues. And I guess that's the thing with broadcasting. You just kind of have to listen to yourself and no one's there to really challenge your points. And then
I think Webber is just hanging out with Marv Albert too much. That's probably why he's losing his marbles.
So he's cross-dressing?
Oh, God.
You never heard about that?
No.
Oh, man.
What? What
You're
is
about
this?
To go into a deep black hole of Google right now.
Oh,
type
man.
Marv me. Albert cross-dressing, you'll find out.
No, I'm not Googling this, dude. Can you just tell the story, please?
Nah, I'm not going to tell the story on the podcast.
Come on, man. That's so lame. Jesus.
It was a pretty Christ. Big scandal in the 70s. I think he has suspended a few games for it, too.
Well, he would have fit in nowadays. Woo! Yo, Raj, oh, yeah. Quick question. I guess we got to do this at some point, so let's just do it now. Who's your finals MVP?
It's LeBron James. Like, clearly he's been the best player in this series in terms of just impact. I think, obviously, Anthony Davis has been a huge part of the Lakers' success, but if it was Anthony Davis and the rest of the Lakers against Miami, I think Miami would have probably won this in 4 or 5. But if it was LeBron James and there's no Anthony Davis, I think the Lakers would still have a chance. So he's been the best player. He's creating a lot on offense. He's the ultimate mismatch. Miami doesn't really have a good answer for him either.
For me, it's Alex Caruso. I think he brought the most heart, determination, grit, especially. I mean, he's a white guy, so he plays very gritty. He's been consistent on the defensive end. He's hit some shots. So for me, it's Alex Caruso.
Yeah, I mean, 22 minutes, shooting 3 of 5, and having an overall -5 in game 4 is very impactful.
Hey, plus minus doesn't tell the whole story, okay?
Yo,
let's be realistic here. It's Anthony Davis.
Hold on. Alex Caruso is not even the best white guy on the court at all times.
Yeah.
You're telling
he has
me,
been at points.
You're telling me Alex Caruso is better than Tyler Hero? Get the hell out of here.
At points in this series? Absolutely.
No,
Tyler Hero
sir.
Has been so bad on defense. Oh,
no,
man.
Sir. Alex Caruso has not been better than Tyler Hero.
Tyler Hero
point.
Has been Michael Porter Jr. level on defense in a lot of the series. That's a massive negative.
Uh-huh.
I think he was single-handedly responsible for like all the Lakers' points in the first quarter last game.
Tyler Hero is a walking bucket. You know what Alex Caruso is? He's a walking 20 minutes a game. Get the hell out of here.
I feel like Alex Caruso is like absolutely overrated in Laker circles. Then around the NBA, he's underrated.
No, he's not underrated in the NBA. Everyone loves Alex Caruso. He's overrated by everybody. Let's relax, okay? Jesus
yeah,
Christ, Josh. Just because he's white doesn't mean you got to ride with the guy.
That's not the reason, all right? I like his hair.
I'm sure you do. So tell me why Anthony Davis would get your pick.
I mean, in the one game that Miami won, it was because Anthony Davis was not in the game, right? And the Lakers are a big minus when he's off the court as well. And their defense just goes down the drain. I mean, even last game when he was off the court, what did Miami do? They gave the ball to Bam in the middle of the floor, and he absolutely dominated for a few minutes straight. I think he had like 7 points in a row on Markieff Morris, just like running into him and throwing the ball up. And it was working. It was sort of like going back to the, you know, the Boston series where Bam had that 7 minute stretch where he'd bring the ball up and basically go Giannis against Boston, just bringing the ball up and going through guys. And obviously Davis has been multidimensional in defense, popping out against Robinson in a lot of cases on those pin downs. being able to cut that off. They recovered a Butler on pick and rolls and being able to guard Butler in general and ISOs. So I think his defense alone, you know, in combination with his offense the first couple of games, and he's been pretty consistent on offense regardless, even despite Miami double-teaming him a lot of the time. His defense has been just otherworldly, and I think he deserves it. Also, I don't like LeBron.
The truth came out at the very end of that monologue, eh?
Give it to AD. Soil LeBron's, you know, his legacy.
Nah, LeBron's going to get it. Sorry, Josh. Not happening.
I don't know. The Raiders today are pretty woke, and they get to decide, right? They're going to look at the advanced stats. And
No.
Anthony Davis defensive rating.
No. There's only seven voters. Seven voters for Finals MVP. That's it. So it's not. Well, I guess it depends who it is. Writers. Yeah, it does depend who it is. I don't know who it is, so well, I guess we'll see. But I know that there's only seven, so you know we're not looking at like 100 voters on this situation here. Thank God.
If it's the more analytical minds, Davis will win.
Who do you think would actually get it? Like of all the, you know, we consume a lot of NBA media. Who do you think would actually have it? I'm assuming Zach Lowe.
I think last year it was Hubie Brown got a vote, right?
Yes, he did. He voted for Fred VanVleet last year. Good vote. He was the only one who voted for Fred. Yeah, I'm assuming those three, right?
I think Rachel Nichols got a vote 1 year too.
Pretty sure she always does.
She's brutal.
Wow, this guy.
Yeah, let's save that for another day. We should have our favorite NBA personalities and our least favorite on a pod.
Oh, that'd be... Yeah, I'm so down. We can do an NBA personalities draft. That would actually be sick.
Who would go number one? Man.
Yeah, we'll save it for another pod. Josh
is going to say Bill Simmons.
Skip Bayless.
Oh, my God. The Sacramento Kings select Skip Bayless.
Yo, low-key, though, I'm gonna select like, Kevin Durant or some shit. Kyrie Irving. All right, guys. So you both think it's over in five?
I don't want it to end, but I kind of want it to end because I would hate for the Lakers to win it in like seven games and LeBron hit a game-winning shot to build his legacy. So you know what? Just end the misery.
Yeah, it's over, bud.
Heat in seven. Let's go.
Keep your dream alive.
Yeah, I got to keep my bet alive, man. No matter what, I got to ride with my money. So, Heat in seven. Let's get it. Anyways, I want to thank everyone for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe on iTunes. We're on Spotify, Stitcher, you know, Podbean, iHeartRadio. I can name all the podcast platforms. We're all there. You can hit us up on Instagram and Twitter at Stretch4Pod. Until next time, peace.